fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, baby! They can't block Calais Campbell.
Cuts right to the five, Brown to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown!
You've got to be kidding me, Carson Palmer.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I didn't see you guys with any sort of moving boxes after the Sunday game, the final home game of the season. But, you know, you're not going to see the press box at University of Phoenix Stadium for, well, I don't know, late July at this rate. Is that correct, Darren Urban and Kyle Odegaard?
You never know what the job might entail. We could end up at the stadium for something, and I'm never going to say never, Paulie.
But okay. Darren's got that lifetime contract with the Cardinals. He doesn't have to worry about any impending free agency.
I see. Well, he has his own office over at the stadium as well. So, you know what I mean? He just goes over there. You know. See, me, I have to pack it in and pack it
this
out every day.
This is fake news being put out
there. They don't even give me a drawer, much less any sort of office around here. That's the way it works. It is Cardinals Underground. And yeah, we are talking about the last home game of the season. And true to form all season long, true or false, it was a moving target. Every game it's been something different or someone different. This time you enter not having allowed a 300-yard passer all season long, and boom, that goes right out the window with Drew Brees and company.
Yeah. And that's what Tyrann Mathieu was talking about after the game. He's like, the offense plays really well, and then the defense gives up a bunch of points. The defense plays really well, and the offense can't score points. Or both sides are playing well, and the special teams messes up. So it seems like from week to week, you never know what it's going to look like. All three phases have looked okay at times and looked pretty good at times, but for the most part, it's never come together this season.
So does that make it easier or more difficult to diagnose? I think the thing I'm most intrigued about is, what do Steve Keim and Bruce Arians think? Where do they go? What sort of decisions do they make with this team when it is a moving target?
Well, and it's not just a moving target in terms of diagnosing what's wrong, but some of the things are kind of outside your control. When you start talking about as many free agents as you have, which I'm sure some of them, maybe perhaps many of them, they might even want to bring back. But then all of a sudden you start talking about market forces, and as Steve Keim was saying, it takes two to make a deal. You know, that's part of the problem as you go into this, is there's so much unknown anyways. There's stuff you have to dissect as an organization anyways. And then there's other stuff that you can't control that could impact what your roster looks like next year that you don't necessarily want to have happen in terms of losing a guy, but you might. So, you know, this could be, and we've talked about this before, this could be one of the more interesting off seasons in a long, long time, especially given the fact that I would expect the head coach to be in place and the coaching staff not to have a lot of change and the general manager to stay in place. And I do think the quarterback will be around. Considering all those pieces are there, it seems like there's a lot up in the air.
But you know what, to name names, I mean, for example, I think a lot of us were resigned to the fact that Calais Campbell would be gone at the end of the season. But you know what, at 31 years of age, is he really going to get that long-term big money deal? He might. But then you look at a guy like Tony Jefferson, who I went into this season thinking, oh yeah, Tony's part of the future, but he's had a heck of a season.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
he's still relatively very underpaid. Could someone blow him away? And then all of a sudden, like that, come March, he's gone.
Yeah.
And even Steve Keim right now, I'm sure he has an idea of what these guys will get and what he wants to offer, but you never know if somebody does want to come in and pay Tony, or if somebody's willing to give Calais 3 years at a decent rate. You can't sign him if he's going to get a three-year contract somewhere else. So even for Steve, he has an idea, I'm sure, in place, but ideas can get blown up pretty quickly in free agency.
And I would also add to that real quick that I have really no doubt in my mind. I don't know any specifics, but I have no doubt in my mind there has probably been an attempt to extend a couple of guys, mm-hmm. not knowing who they are.
Agreed.
I don't know if it would be Campbell or Jefferson, but you know, you go to them and say, this is what we want to extend you, and the agents are like, heck, we're 8 games or 6 games or now 2 games closer to free agency, and then we can see what the market says. Why would we sign this now? And that's kind of what they're facing.
Yeah, we get that from fans a lot, asking, why don't you re-sign them? They're playing great. And of course you'd want to bring these guys back right now, but like Darren's saying, when you're that close to unrestricted free agency, when you can hopefully get teams to get into a bidding war for you and really maximize your value, you're not going to sign when you're that close.
Which pending free agent would you be most uncomfortable losing? Which guy do you think?
Chandler Jones for me. I don't think
it's still Chandler Jones.
Huh? Good pick.
Still Chandler Jones?
Yeah, I think an edge rusher that has the ability to be elite, going to be, I think, 27 next year, a guy that can be a building block. For me, I think he's going to be the free agent guy that you want back the most.
See, and I would say that I'm not afraid of losing him, if for no other reason that when you look at the totality of their free agents, I would think to myself, there's really only one person that could get the franchise tag, and that's him. And I don't think they'll let him walk away, not after 1 year. So I just see him as a franchise tag guy if they can't get a deal done. So I haven't really given much thought of him not being here next year, because I think they would at least tag him to get one more year out of it.
Yeah, and so, I definitely think he'll be back, but that's the guy I would not want to lose.
I get that. And so if I push Chandler Jones out of the way and I start looking at the landscape right now, it's funny. I would say at one point it might have been Tony Jefferson. When you let's face it, have some concerns about that secondary and where you go with and what happens with Tyrann Mathieu, for instance, and DJ Swearinger is a free agent as well. Tony Jefferson's a guy who I wouldn't mind having back there. But as we get closer and we have to the end of the season, we haven't had many questions answered about Robert Kamdichi. I think it's fair to say Calais Campbell now. That's with a caveat with me, and I love Calais, and I think he's playing really well. I don't know if when I look at that, I'm saying beyond 2017, which is where you come up with an issue, which we're talking about, which is somebody's going to give a multi-year contract, and not saying the Cardinals wouldn't, but for the money he might get somewhere else.
And Steve Keim has publicly acknowledged that he has been discussing contract extension with Chandler Jones, Team Jones on that account, right? It hasn't struck a deal yet, obviously. Correct. What if they strike a deal? Could Calais Campbell be a candidate for the franchise tag himself? Is there anybody else that could be tagged?
See, I wouldn't say so, because if you look at how much of the franchise tag would cost for a defensive tackler, and that's the other problem you're going to have, is they've been calling him a defensive tackle for a couple years now, and my guess is Calais Campbell would and his agents would argue that he's a defensive end, and then you start getting into the thing of either way.
What's the highest paid right now? Marcel Darius, Muhammad Wilkerson at about 17 a year, if memory serves, I think.
I haven't looked at that, because honestly, I really don't think I don't even think that's on the table. I don't think there's any way you would franchise tag Calais Campbell. You franchised him the last time.
I'm just saying his cap number this year is 15.
Right, and I think that's probably
it's not like you're doubling that cap figure or anything. No. I mean, it wouldn't be that much more to franchise tag him.
When you're getting into your 30s, you want the salary cap number to start coming down if you're the Cardinals, and you don't want to give him anything close to what he's gotten in his prime years. You're thinking $10 million or something like that, not
maybe less.
Even at 15, that's
and I will say this: I think in a perfect world, he wouldn't have a $15 million cap number.
Mm-hmm. True.
I think they're carrying that because basically both sides painted. Well, I don't know why both sides, the Cardinals were kind of painted into a corner. You couldn't let him go. He wasn't going to. You didn't want to extend him with big money, and he wasn't certainly going to take a pay cut. So you kind of were stuck with him at 15. I certainly don't think they want anything near that.
But in a perfect world, the new 9-0 would be filling in, and you'd just be washing your hands of Clay Campbell entirely.
That's true.
You can't do that right now. And so, look, there are wants and there are needs, whereas Calais Campbell might have been a want. Is he now a need?
Well, I think that's a fair question. I would say you can't – the statement you can't do that right now, I don't agree with that.
Okay.
You can do it. Now, you might be taking a little bit of a step back with your defensive line, but you can do it. And again, when you start looking at the big picture of this building this roster and I know. Ultimately, Steve Keim looks at this all the time with a three-year view. He said that since the day he walked in. I got a three-year view of this thing, and I want to keep this. I want to have sustained success. He is not going to sacrifice that three-year view / sustained success, or the possibility therein, to have one more year of Calais Campbell and kill your cap for 3 years after that. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, if Calais Campbell was willing to sign a one-year deal and you gave him a healthy chunk of change for just one season, I think the Cardinals would consider it. But
and that's my scenario, year.
And if you're Calais Campbell, why are you signing a one-year deal when you can get a lot more guaranteed money from a different team?
And so, I do think that offer. I mean, again, in your scenario, I don't say that couldn't happen, but the only way to me it could happen is if another team doesn't come around. I mean, Calais loves it here, wants to remain a Cardinal. He's made no bones about this. Calais also isn't an idiot. And the bottom line is, if a team comes along to offer him 3 or 4 years and $20 million guaranteed over those 3 years or whatever it might be, he's not turning that down. And he's not.
And he didn't just sign with an experienced, savvy agent in Tom Condon, who's been there, done that many times. So I just throw that out there because, look, if you're not bringing back Calais and we figure he's not coming back, you have to bring in another free agent defensive tackle, I think.
I would agree, especially since Frosty Rucker's a free agent too, and you don't know if he's coming back. And you need to have some kind of veteran leadership on that line. I absolutely agree with you there.
All right. Do you guys agree with this? When December started, there was no real consideration that Larry Fitzgerald would step away from the game. But here at the end of December, and just reading his body language and some of the comments and just seeing, you know, maybe how worn down he is at the end of the season, do you guys consider it more of a serious consideration that he truly is contemplating walking away from the game, especially now that he's number three and he made those comments, he's not going to catch the guys in front of him? The more I see him, the more I think he's seriously contemplating it.
Did you really just say that earlier this month you didn't think anybody seriously considered him walking away?
I said I did not. Based on what I saw, okay. I thought he would be coming back for sure.
I will say that earlier this month, earlier this season, I didn't close the door on him coming back. I certainly didn't think it was – I did not feel comfortable in saying that. I felt it was a very 50-50 proposition. So really, not a whole lot has changed for me with Larry.
Okay. I've come around to where you were earlier.
I do.
Because I was more bullish on him returning early in December. Now, not so much.
I didn't get the greatest, this comes across poorly, because it wasn't a bad thing. But even when he signed his extension, it wasn't like, I got this real vibe when he talked to us about it. I mean, I remember asking him in training camp, you know, well, you know, what about this extension or whatever I asked him at the time. And he basically said, well, it's not like I was looking for it. They basically put it in front of me and signed it. He did not sound like a guy who was super excited to have signed for another year. He has never.
The other times he's been asked, he said, well, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow for dinner, right?
Exactly. He said that a couple times. He's played it very coy. You hear what he said after the Saints game, which is basically, we're going to see what happens in the offseason. I think that it has so many levels to it. I think that has to do with how he feels. I think it has to do with how the team roster is built, as we've just talked about. There's a lot up in the air. I have always thought there was a very, I didn't say good chance. Again, I would say 50-50. I always thought there was a possibility that this was going to be it. So nothing he's done at this point has swayed me otherwise, especially the fact that people keep giving him the opportunity to sway us otherwise, and he will not do it.
That's what I was going to say. When you talked to Carson, he was asked after the game against the Saints, are you coming back? He goes, I haven't thought about it, but I'd expect to, and I'd sure like to. Like, you, out of Carson, you know always what he's thinking. Fitz is always willing to dodge the question or be very ambiguous. So the more it's brought up as the season gets nearer to a close, he remains ambiguous. And
so is that
and then you start thinking, okay, and you try to read what he's doing, but he just doesn't want to answer the question right now.
Even his man of the year thing, when he starts talking about how he's not catching Tony Gonzalez, and everybody's like, well, what is that? Well, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying I'm not catching that guy. I mean, everything he said this year, as we tend to dissect all this stuff, there's been nothing he said that makes you think he's definitely coming back. There's been lots of stuff where he said where you're thinking, well, he might retire.
Mm-hmm. I guess my point is that I think he's still deciding.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And hopefully for every Cardinals fan, right, and those of us who consider him a vital part of not only the team, but the team culture and leadership in there, that he takes a good month before he makes the decision, because I think he's truly worn down right now.
I agree. I think he's – and I've – sorry, I'm stepping on everybody's toes. I feel very strongly about this stuff. He's not only is he worn down, which he made clear last week when we were talking to him at his thing and talking about how beat up he is, but I think mentally, when we saw him in the locker room in Carolina after the NFC Championship, that was a devastated man. And when he talked to us after the game, that was a devastated man. And the chance of him getting built back up just took a shot, kick to the cradle this year with the way this team has gone. And I don't think that has helped the mentality in terms of wanting to play more.
So that's my follow-up question. My final question on this talk about Larry. Do you go out this way? Do you go out with a losing record. Now, you go out with some ridiculous stats, maybe 100 mm-hmm. catches again, maybe the team record in receptions for a season. I'm guessing you're probably going out with yet another Pro Bowl. The personal stats are there. The team numbers, not so much.
I think going out this way matters less to where you look forward and how does next year line up. Carson sounds like he wants to come back. Bruce Arians has said he's coaching next year. It kind of has the feeling of, okay, let's give this one more shot where a bunch of things went wrong in 2016. But if we do some stuff in free agency, if we bring the core back, okay, I feel like we have a shot at making the playoffs next year. If he doesn't feel that way, if he thinks the team is just going to stay at 500, what's the point? But if he does think there's a legitimate shot at making the playoffs and then making a run, I think that will play in more than, well, how does the last season of my career look like as a team?
I would agree. And I would say the other thing to watch and to pay attention to, and I haven't talked to Larry about this, but just watching him as we do. I mean, Larry's had a nice year. He's leading the NFL in receptions, as you said. He's going to have 1,000 yards. He's going to have 100 catches. He's probably going to break his own record, which he set last year for catches. It's been great. He's also under 10 yards a reception for the first time, significantly under 10 yards a reception for the first time in his whole career. And that's you start looking at, okay, what is he? Where is he? Larry wants to compete. Larry also doesn't want to get himself in a situation, and he knows his own body better than anybody. He doesn't want to get himself in a situation where his personal play is going to trail off. I think that scares him too, because it's the opposite of what Kyle said. I agree with you. I think the biggest thing is believing that this team can compete next year, because otherwise, what's the point? But the other thing is, he does not want to put himself out there and have everybody's last thought of him being gaining 8 yards a catch, right, and having trouble separating on these short routes, which he's banged up a little bit right now, but you're starting to see a little bit. We're seeing Larry looking for the flag more and more because the guy's right with him all the time.
You know, I would agree with that, and I think that's a good diagnosis of Larry, the person, in that his yards after catch are probably at an all-time low. How much of it has to do with the knee? How much of it has to do with the ankle? You know, he's always going to be able to get his big body between the DB and the football. There's no doubt. He'll continue to make catches. I think just watching him on the sideline, there's no doubt he's frustrated by not getting yards after catch, making plays. And I remember kind of bugging him a couple years ago when he had, what, the 88-yard score against the Eagles at home? Remember, he went the distance?
Yes.
And Pash's famous call, the old man can still run, right? And he's at the 10, and he yells that. So I kind of needled Larry about that, and Larry took a little bit of umbrage. And he said, you know what? I've been tracking my numbers in my off-season training program. I have my split times between cones and these split. My split times have not gone down, hardly at all. But if he goes in this off-season and he starts running some of those same drills that he's been running for a dozen years, and all of a sudden the times have fallen off dramatically, I could see your scenario, Darren. He says, you know what? That's it.
And that's a great point. And when you're in the off-season and you're healthy, the other question is and everybody gets banged up, but if you get older and you have a little bit more trouble getting healthy once you get banged up because you're older and your split times are affected because you're banged up, not because you're not necessarily the athlete you once were, but because your body can't recover quite as fast, that all plays into it. And I'm well aware of Larry being very sensitive to the speed. I remember talking to him in the auditorium about a month after the Super Bowl to do a story on him and his great playoff run. And I said something to him about that amazing, you know, how he split Harrison and Polamalu and ran the thing. And it was good natured, because with Fitz, it's always good natured, but you know where he's coming from. And he did not like the idea that I suggested that it was a surprising that he ran away from everybody because that's in 2009. Right. So, I mean,
it's one thing when Anquan Boldin used to write him about it. It's another thing when media guys do. You know what I'm saying? Because you remember that well. Yes. Remember that? Not that Anquan was a burner. I mean, you know, that was
but Anquan could pile on Larry like nobody's business.
Yeah, that was. By the way, okay, as long as we're talking about this, and I like Kyle's point too, that as long as he has a legit quarterback, that's a compelling reason to come back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this has come up before or not. You guys tell me. But in the post-game radio interview after the Saints lost, I asked BA about, man, Carson looks sharp. Just being on the sideline and watching some of the throws and the velocity and the zip on some of the throws, I said, you know, his arm's as strong as ever here in week 15. And BA paused and he said, it's probably better than ever. It's probably stronger than earlier in the season. Has that been said earlier? Was there any actual acknowledgement that, Maybe there was something, and now Carson's arm is actually better than ever.
That it was getting a little bit weaker after a few weeks?
I mean, I don't know.
They're never going to say that when it's going on, but there's definitely been talk the last few weeks that his arm strength is picked up and it's looking good, and that's an encouraging thing when you're talking about a 37-year-old quarterback, almost 37, and you look forward and you need him to be able to keep the arm strength, because clearly we've seen what the problems is when the offensive line breaks down. And that's the issue with Carson right now, is he doesn't have the mobility and the sacks. But if you're looking forward, if you're saying we want him to be our quarterback next year, then let's just get the line fixed. We're not worried about Palmer's arm. We're more worried about keeping him clean. But it's nice to see that he's accurate. The arm strength is there. When he's had time, he's looked good. It's just been a problem of giving him time and then the receivers catching the ball.
In fact, I would say maybe the only 7-step drop against the Saints was the sack. It was a jailbreak right up the middle through Taylor Boggs, and Cameron Jordan got him off the edge.
That was about step number four.
I heard Wolf and Pash on the radio. I was listening, and they were talking about how it was a 7-step drop. I'm like, dude, that could have been a 3-step drop, and he was getting sacked. That had nothing to do with the drop. That had everything to do with the whiff.
Okay, well, that's our segue, though, into the Seattle game.
Oh, sorry about that.
And the O-line into Seattle and going up to CenturyLink Field, right? And that defensive front and that crowd noise, the ultimate challenge for any O-line.
Let's give them some props firsthand for doing so well against New Orleans, because there was that play when Boggs got beaten by Cameron Jordan.
Yeah.
And the offense definitely did a lot of quick passes, screens that were kind of the outside runs type thing. But this is a huge challenge when you have the crowd noise now, as you have a front that is way better than New Orleans. Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett don't get the credit I think they should. I think they're both two great edge rushers. And, yeah, it's going to be a huge task. I don't know how it's going to go, but good luck to them.
It's funny you bring up Averill and Bennett. You and I were talking about this on during the game yesterday, because when I tweeted out something after one of Calais's play about how he knew it might be his last home game, and fortunately or unfortunately, I have Seattle fans that follow me. And then all of a sudden, all of them perk up and they're like, yeah, we're going to have Seattle go sign Calais Campbell. I'm like, really? How are you going to – if the Cardinals can't afford Calais Campbell, how are you with Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, who's going in the last year of his deal next year, has already been unhappy with his contract and he's only making $6
million.
And
you tell him, Darren.
And he's also been considered at this point better than Calais Campbell. How are you going to be able to afford that?
And Russell Wilson's contract kicks in big time, doesn't it? In these
and
coming
you're
paying
Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam
Good luck
Chancellor
with
and Bobby Wagner.
But
Sherman's now the offensive coordinator and play caller, so that's why he gets the extra money.
That's how they operate.
His business card is more loaded than ever with titles.
Look, the Seattle defense is still very, very good, and offensively I think they're still a roller coaster in large part because of that offensive line. But the bottom line is, since the last time the Cardinals saw the Seahawks, and Bruce Arians made mention, his team looks nothing like it did, which is a concern, and possibly more of a concern. Seattle doesn't look – I mean, Russell Wilson can run again, and Thomas Rawls is a much better running back than anybody else they had in that game. That would be my concern.
In fact, if you gave me a choice this season, the biggest kick to the gut of them all, it would be the tie against Seattle, because the Cardinals slugged it out with the Seahawks at home. They deserved a win. They earned a win. They needed a win. Mm-hmm. They didn't get the win, and you know what? It just sort of deflated things.
The season had been such an uphill climb to that point, and even though they had scratched back to 3-3, seemed like nothing was quite going their way. And if you do get that win, you're feeling so much better about yourself. The narrative isn't that you doinked a 24-yard field goal and blew this game, and we were in the locker room as like, we tied? Like, what is going on? They were just all befuddled. If you won that game, hey, we just beat Seattle, get some swag back. And the issues, I'm sure, would have popped up again, but at least you would have been feeling good, and maybe that changes a little bit of the season.
And I do think that there's been a lot of talk about, and in hindsight especially, it seems correct that there was a feeling like, even when things were bumpy early in the year, that things would come around. Mm-hmm. And I felt like if they would have won that Seattle game, that might have been the, okay, we're good, we're going to kind of take off from here. And when it didn't happen, it did feel like, okay, something's wrong, and it just started being getting in every crevice of everybody's thoughts of what's wrong with this team.
I wind it up with this. David Johnson, when asked about, you know, the chance of him becoming the third running back ever with 1,000 yards rushing receiving, and BA said, quote, "I'd be surprised." Just based on the fact that as a running back and trying to get 200 yards receiving with two games left, especially against Seattle's defense, And I'm guessing those guys are going to be targeting David Johnson. I mean, as B.A. Yes. said, you know, he split him out wide as a wide receiver, and he got double cover mm-hmm. against the Saints. I mean, he's getting more defensive attention than ever.
Yeah. They don't want him to hurt. That's the one guy right now that can hurt yeah. you on the Cardinals offense. So why are you going to let him? Especially Seattle has a lot to play for still. And you can talk yourself into this last game against the Rams where David Johnson could really go off and you force feed him because he wants that record. People are cognizant of it. But you're going to have to get at least, you know, 70, probably 80 against the Seahawks. And that's a pretty tall task.
What else are we missing here? Chandler Catanzaro, the boos came at home. You know, I mean, there's I tell you, I watched Carson Palmer on the sideline. You guys might have seen it from the press box. Some people tweeted about it. He walked all the way down to the kicker's net after the missed PAT, had sort of a big brother talk with Chandler Catanzaro. Then he made the PAT after the Calais Campbell return, walked all the way out to midfield to find him, to make sure he didn't mm-hmm. go down to the far end of the sideline. He intercepted him short. I've never seen Carson do that. You know, I think he's aware that Chandler needs a little extra moral support.
Yeah.
You know, it was intriguing to hear B.A. attribute a lot of it to the change in holders.
You know, I would say, obviously, the holders don't help, but Drew Butler was holding for him in Miami, and obviously the rain didn't help. But, I mean, look, you gotta do better. You absolutely have to do better. Kickers are going to miss. I think we've gotten to the point in the NFL in a lot of ways, which is one of the reasons they moved the extra point back in the first place, which everybody assumes that every single kick is going to be made, and that's just a ridiculous bar to reach.
But he's now missed nine no. since they moved it, correct?
Right, nine extra points, and that's not good enough. It's not going to be good enough, and I think he knows this. And, you know, it's funny. Kickers are so not that we've had bad kickers around here as people, but Chandler is one of those guys and a kid who it's really hard not to like him.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
I think
nicest guy ever.
I think Carson going to talk to him goes beyond just making sure your kicker's head is right. I think it's going over to make sure Chandler Catanzaro's head was right. And I think that's great. I think everybody's rooting for him. I know fans don't want to hear it because they don't have to meet these guys. They can trash these guys because they're just numbers on the football field, and sometimes it does impact it. Even Steve Kine was saying it even about Michael Floyd. Look, we end up getting attached to many of these people. There's the Michael Floyd release was hard for the guys that made that decision. Whether it was right or wrong, you can argue that, but it was difficult for them because they liked Michael Floyd. And
he's a former first-round pick. Nobody wants him to succeed more than the front
yes.
office of the Cardinals.
I mean, so, and again, when you talk about Catanzaro, you're talking about making these changes. Yes, changes, you have to look seriously at changes. And I would guess that Chandler Catanzaro is probably going to be here the last two games, and then they'd bring somebody in the offseason to seriously challenge him, and we'll see if he's able to hold up to that.
In fact, my biggest issue with Chandler Catanzaro up until about 2 months ago, he's still calling me sir. And as I've instructed the interns around here, thou shalt not call me sir. I feel old enough already. We just can't have that. It's unacceptable.
Well, what do you want us to call you?
No, I'm not answering any questions. I'm like Larry over here. I'm not answering any more questions on that. Okay, I'm just going to be really nondescript. That'll do it for this edition of Cardinals Underground. Only one of us has to stand in the rain on Christmas Eve.
True.
And I think you know who
Wait,
it is.
It's going to rain.
Enjoy that.
Give thanks accordingly. It can't be as bad as Miami, right? Knock on wood. That's Cardinals Underground.